Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, Pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you so much for listening. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Go snag your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. I share a lot of clinical pearls with regards to things that are actually seen in clinical practice, as well as things that tend to show up on pharmacology board exams, finals, and things of that nature. So definitely go snag that for free as a thank you from me for simply, you know, listening to the podcast and, of course, sharing it with others who may find it interesting and or beneficial. All right, so I am going to talk about empagliflozin today. Brand name of this medication is Jardiance. Its use has definitely escalated over the last few years, at least from my perspective and what I've seen. It is used in the management of diabetes primarily, but that is changing a little bit as well based upon some more recent evidence over the last few years. Mechanistically, so we're using this medication for diabetes. How does it lower blood sugar? That's what you really want to ask yourself. And it's categorized as an SGLT2 inhibitor. So what the heck is that, right? So the sodium glucose cotransporter 2 is found in the kidney. And what SGLT2 does is it basically helps the body reabsorb glucose back into the bloodstream from the kidney and renal tubules and things like that. So by using this medication, we're blocking that reabsorption of glucose back into the body and ultimately lowering blood sugars if it's not being reabsorbed. Now, the other thing to think about with that mechanism is, where does that glucose go? Well, it's got to go out through the urine. So that can, you know, lead to some potential adverse effects, which, of course, I'll talk about a little bit. But, yeah, that lowering of blood sugar out through the urine is how it has its blood glucose lowering effects. Dosing-wise, pretty straightforward. You know, and a big advantage of the medication is it's once daily dosing and it's oral. You know, it's not an injection or anything. And, you know, getting patients to take medications two or three times a day can be a challenge for many of them. So once daily dosing is definitely nice. Usually for diabetes, 10 milligrams, and then we can bump up to 25 milligrams if tolerated. And usually we wait about 4 weeks to decide whether we want to bump that up. Now, I mentioned that, you know, this medication was obviously developed for diabetes, but we found, or they found in studying the medication, that there's additional benefits. So patients at risk or diagnosed with ASCVD, we potentially have cardiovascular protective effects from this medication. So that's a potential benefit. Heart failure patients can potentially reduce hospitalization in heart failure patients as well. And that's patients with or without diabetes. So that's definitely an interesting finding as well. And then obviously in diabetes, patients have generally over time or the potential to have that declining renal function. And empagliflozin has potentially shown some benefits in that area as well. Okay, so I just mentioned kind of that renal protective effect potentially. I want to stay focused on renal function because we recall from the mechanism that this works in the kidney, and that's how it lowers blood sugar. Okay? So as you could imagine, if that kidney is functioning poorly, blocking SGLT2 probably isn't going to have that great of an effect. And indeed, that's what we see with the package insert. So if EGFR is less than 45, we're probably not going to have a lot of benefit on the blood sugar side of things with this medication. However, in the studies on the renal and cardiovascular benefits side, we have potentially seen the benefits still, even in patients with poor function, renal function that way. So again, if we're looking at it strictly for blood sugar lowering purposes, kind of similar to metformin, but I guess different reasoning. But empagliflozin probably won't work that well in bringing down A1C if we're using it in patients with poor renal function. Again, kind of the cutoff mentioned is less than 45 mils per minute there. Let's kind of, again, think about that mechanism of action a little bit, and I think that helps with side effects as well. So when there's an increase of glucose out through the urine, there's a couple of things that can happen with that. We can send fluid off with that. So patients may be at risk for lower blood pressure. Now, that could potentially be a beneficial thing, I guess, but particularly maybe in our elderly patients, we've got to be a little bit careful about this. If we drop blood pressure too much, they're going to get dizzy and fall. Another aspect of running fluid out or increasing fluid loss out through the urine, dehydration. Again, elderly tend to be more prone for this risk, so that is something that we need to think about. Coupled with that water, I mentioned initially glucose is going to go out through the urine. Now, bacteria like sugar. They like glucose. It helps them grow and prosper. And with that, so do fungus, fungal infections. So genitourinary fungal infections are definitely a risk with the use of this medication. Urinary tract infections, maybe a little bit of a risk there as well. So those caused by bacteria. So as a pharmacist, something I look out for as I'm, you know, reviewing medications over time with a patient, if I see an SGLT2 inhibitor, I'm probably going to ask about recent fungal medications, you know, yeast infections, if they've had frequent UTIs. Those are things I'm just going to kind of ask about and see if they've encountered any issues with that lately. And then obviously make sure to, you know, reassess that risk benefit of the empagliflozin or other SGLT2 inhibitor. Other adverse effects, probably more on the rare side of things or associations, ketoacidosis risk, necrotizing fasciitis risk, bone fracture, lower limb amputation. That's more of a controversial one. But these are all things that, you know, I am prepared to speak to because when patients Google search a medication and they Google search side effects, you know, these are probably going to come up on Google in some way, shape, or form. And you definitely may be asked about these. Again, all those are extremely, extremely rare. Definitely the most common things are, you know, increase in sugar to the urine, so that infection risk, potentially drop in blood pressure, maybe dehydration a little bit there as well. Monitoring parameters, obviously, you know, in diabetes, we're looking at A1C anyway, blood sugar, renal function, I've mentioned already, blood pressure lowering effect, again, mentioned that. Keeping an eye out for any type of antifungals that might be used to treat genitourinary infections. That's definitely something to keep tabs on, as well as UTIs, bacterial infections as well. And then, you know, as patients are starting this medication, maybe getting used to it, maybe increasing doses, you can keep tabs on monitoring for signs of ketoacidosis, you know, your nausea and vomiting, fatigue, shortness of breath, GI pain, that type of thing. All right, so let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for pharmacist board certification study materials, like ambulatory care, medication therapy management, pharmacotherapy, geriatrics, NAPLEX, or the psychiatric pharmacist practice exam, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. In addition, if you're a nurse, physician, med student, PA, nurse practitioner, we've got a bunch of different resources. Clinician's Guide to Common Drug Interactions, that's been a popular one amongst a lot of people. Just a great review on some of the more common drug interactions and just some clinical guidance, some things to think about when looking at those interactions. So again, that's on Audible. You can also find that on Amazon. So definitely go check out meded101.com/store. All the links to everything that we have can be found there. All right, so let's finish up on drug interactions. Now, empagliflozin's nice in that we don't really deal with many of the CYP enzymes, you know, your 3A4s, 2D6s. That's generally not going to be a big issue with this medication. The most important and common drug interactions are typically with additive effects. So I think about diuretics first and foremost. If we're promoting fluid loss with empagliflozin, or that can happen, we can increase that risk for dehydration and lower blood pressure and things like that. Blood sugar lowering agents, I think this is common sense. If somebody's on insulin, sulfonylurea, you know, we've got to obviously be aware when we add an SGLT2 inhibitor like empagliflozin, we're going to increase the risk of lowering blood sugar, which is obviously what we're trying to do. But if we lower it too much, we can put that patient into a hypoglycemic episode, which is certainly not good either. And then blood pressure lowering medications. You know, I talked about the hypotensive type effect. We may need to back off on, you know, amlodipine or, you know, a diuretic or ACE inhibitor if that blood pressure drops too low when we add a drug like empagliflozin. All right, so I think that's going to wrap it up for today. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. If you want to track me down, you can find me at LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCGP, BCPS, or MedEducation101@gmail.com is the other way to probably most quickly track me down. I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you guys so much for listening, supporting the podcast, and our sponsor, MedEd101.com, as well. Take care. Have a good rest of your day.